It's time to focus on what drives e-commerce results. It's time for Browse Basket Buy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Browse Basket Buy, the podcast slash webinar series that knows that the only number that matters is a dance number with top draw choreography. Talking of which, joining me is a man who I'm sure is a really good dancer. It's Andy Griffiths. Hello, Andy.
Hello. You have a terrible guest if choreography and dancing is the nature of it. But I've spent most of the last week brushing up whether I want poppadoms or bread. But
okay. What did you go for in the end?
Oh, bread all the way.
Right. Okay. Fine.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get on off menu in another life. But yeah,
we'll definitely.
Thanks for having me along.
That's all right. That's definitely. I will send the recording on to James Acaster, and I'm sure you'll get on.
We'll be keen. Yeah.
So what I like to do, Andy, rather than me mangling your job history and all that kind of stuff, is just ask you to introduce yourself. So if you could just tell everybody a little bit about your background and all about you, that would be great.
Yeah, super. So fanatically left-handed, Scorpio, enjoy, you know, sort of long winding walks and cozy nights in. But yeah, look, predominantly my career has been around digital marketing and media, starting in the very dodgy early days of retail media, which is obviously you can't move for hearing how that's booming now. So there's a nice bit of smugness if I told you so going back to sort of early days. But
well,
spent a lot of time around that for predominantly FMCG, travel and luxury brands, moving on into more on sort of the paid media agency side for e-com brands, etc. And I join you today as Chief Growth Officer at Climb Agency, who are sort of a fully integrated digital agency.
Excellent. Marvellous. And the reason we got you on today, we're going to talk about metrics, media, maths, and other things that don't start with M, but do matter an awful lot. So to kick us off, metrics is a really interesting topic. What are the right metrics? What are the right ones to be looking at, not looking at? You said you're obsessed with metrics. People are obsessed with metrics rather than real returns. What does that addiction to those metrics look like? And when you're managing actual budgets that have to justify themselves?
Yeah, look, I think there's several things that sort of compounded this, right? We're all very used to and have been for a long time now, well over a decade, sort of 15 plus years, in terms of the fact that along with the customer journey getting more and more digital, there are more touch points, there's more data to go after. We know that in a data first world, there's, you know, sort of more rigor required about it, etc. What gets really easy, I think, to fall foul of, and you know, everyone's human, we all do it, is sort of focusing on that kind of glory stat or something that perhaps seems in the immediate short term super important, but doesn't necessarily give you a full idea of sort of actual net revenue gain for the business. We see this pretty often. And I think, you know, kind of I'm very lucky that we have a really nice CFO, so I don't want to CFO bash too much. But I think there's, a number of brands that I've dealt with, you know, clients past and present that, you know, you see their kind of their media budget or the Google tax being kind of set by a CFO with a spreadsheet. In that environment and scrutiny, and look, no one's saying that metrics aren't super important from a hygiene perspective, but I think it gets very easy to sort of get stuck into, okay, what exactly, how many pounds did I get back for each one invested or spent? And that starts to become a little bit more short-termist versus looking at stuff that's perhaps harder to measure or perhaps more important, like lifetime value of a consumer and things like that.
Okay. Is there any advice you could give people on how to kind of get the right kind of conversation between a CFO and yourself in order to get the right metrics in place?
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, ironically enough, having kind of good rigor around sort of your data and reporting and your own ability to have the insights and analytics there is a key way of being able to illustrate that. But, quite often it's an education piece, right? And it varies a lot on the business. You know, you've got everything from, you know, a PLC or a blue chip that is, you know, necessarily very, very much run from that, right down to a startup or an e-com where the founder will be the first to put their hand up and say, listen, I know nothing about marketing. I know everything about this incredible thing I've invented or I'm passionate about selling. But it's at the heart of it, I believe, a bit of an education piece. And largely when you're able to kind of go down the lines of some of the logic and challenge a little bit, I think that's that's quite often there and doable. But the skill or understanding gap between those who are sort of stipulating budget and those asked to carry it out is quite often a big gulf.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's always a lot of talk in the marketing world, and I'm a marketer, about how we need to speak the language of the CFO. I do often think, well, it'd be kind of nice if they spoke the language of the CMO as well. It would be nice. But yeah, it's about meeting in the middle and trying to communicate on the same, get everyone on the same page, right?
I think what's ironic for me is that when you look at this is that you would think, coming at it from a completely fresh perspective, you would assume that, okay, well, the performance marketing side of stuff, the paid media, the tangible, measurable, metricable stuff, you would think would, be your greater ally. From anyone who handles a budget, I can long see how kind of, hang on, we just spent 140K to wrap a London bus. And I've got no idea what that's achieved or not. I can see how that could be a hard conversation. However, I think kind of it's difficult for marketers on the performance side of things to challenge a CFO on the basis that, yes, look, I know if we stick everything on to everything on black or everything on red, then on the spreadsheet it looks great. But I can tell you now that from a net revenue gain perspective or perhaps a less short-term view of how we get to a better health or market penetration, whatever the objective might be over the next, say, 2 to 3 years, that can be counterintuitive to it.
Absolutely. I've never got to wrap a London bus. I'm looking forward to that happening at some point. Be great. Also, you talk about the sort of the and you mentioned it earlier, actually, the sort of the Google tax, the brand tax. How much of a brand's budget is going on targeting people who would be buying anyway, in your opinion? What's going on there?
The easy answer is too much.
Yeah.
It varies. Look, it varies massively by brand. And I'll start off with a complete caveat, right, in a cop out that I'm certainly not saying that there's not a place or a role for bidding on brand. When I've owned marketing budgets in previous roles, it's something that I've been an advocate for as well. Certainly in terms of things like protecting your own sort of brand presence against competitors that would be branding on you. There's the fact that even if you've got good organic presence for your brand, then a nice little bit of bidding on your own brand takes up more real estate on the page. All those kind of classic little tactics and tricks. However, again, in this environment where I think we are encouraged to chase what is that sort of dopamine hit of great ROAS or instant sort of gratification around sort of conversion metrics. It's very easy to effectively run around sort of preaching to the converted. A great example would be if you take, and I think this is where it's perhaps more prominent, but a brand where perhaps they are more known for what they do. So, for example, I'm going to use, hence the background, I'm a guitar nut, right? It's where all my money bleeds out to. So I'm going to use Fender, who are one of the best known, biggest brands in guitar builders, right? No one's saying they shouldn't be bidding on Fender and securing their market share and their reputation and their brand equity. However, a complete sort of religious pursuit to bid as much as they possibly can on that kind of term would potentially be at the expense of going more aggressively after someone bidding for electric guitar or best electric guitar for insert X genre here, or latest guitar releases, or best beginners guitars, or whatever else it might be that would be potentially an entry point to it. Now, the tricky thing there when you're increasingly sort of asked to justify your spend and your performance to a CFO or whoever is that that's typically going to give you a lower ROAS. It's going to typically be a slightly trickier or more complex user journey. You might have to bid a bit harder in terms of remarketing budgets and various things like that. It might be a longer customer journey, et cetera. However, arguably, if you're able to sort of measure and understand that customer journey, then bidding on sort of non-branded keywords or less focus of purely a brand approach could and arguably would lead to more sort of net new customer acquisition.
So
It's equivalent to sort of sorry, go on.
No, sorry, it's just so is it a question of that sort of balance? As you say, there's almost a defensive play and an offensive play, which is protect demand that might already be in the market and then generate new demand from other terms. So is it about just balancing those things? Is that the important part?
Yes, and at the heart of that is having sort of the analytics to measure it, right? So, and there's no excuse for it now, right? There is so much that has come out now in terms of the last 2, 3 years, certainly for sort of any kind of e-com or digital performance type brand, where there's heaps of tools out there to help you understand that. You know, there's everything from I could name drop a few. I don't know if that's an appropriate thing or not, but there's
Go for
a
it.
bunch out there that are very good actually at
Yeah.
helping you kind of understand exactly where a customer's come from, or what's the true lifetime value, what's the return rate on certain SKUs that you might bid against, all kinds of different things like this. So there's it's a hard thing to do. It's often gets sort of shoved down the to-do list because it's trickier, but it's it is sort of the first place and the key to understanding kind of real net new revenue and lifetime value for a shopper or customer.
Yeah, that's becoming a real theme of Browse Basket Buy. The more you understand of all those, underneath kind of data and underneath signals, the better you can do essentially in working out where growth can come from.
Absolutely. Look, this is the whole mantra behind sort of returns, not metrics, because you can it's so easily go into analysis paralysis, right? It is a mire of it. And increasingly, I think for agencies, sort of people on my side of the table, increasingly the challenge for us is less about kind of who's got better tech or whatever else, because the tech has all moved on so far. 10 years ago, I'd be pitching and saying kind of, look, who's best at using Google Ads, right? Who can program better? There's still an element of that, but really what's crucial for brands now is finding a partner who can help them sort of navigate the MarTech stack, the wasteland that is numbers and everything else, to try and get through and assimilate that into their business.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd agree with that. So what is we talked a little bit about this, it's about there's people are retreating to the safety of those metrics, the things they can drive easily, the things that are close to them. So what's the right way to incentivize people to try new things and take more risks? Is there a way to do that?
I think the main thing, and this is where the age-old problem for anything that remotely resembles change management or any kind of courage and bravery in terms of business stuff, is that for me, where I've seen it done best is when it's got really good proper buy-in from senior management. And by that I mean not just sort of, oh, do you want to take a punt on this or that new campaign type or shopper persona or whatever. This is more about kind of having deliberate intent behind things such as test and learn. We've talked about, I know that you and I are both complete Rory Sutherland fanboys, massive fan. Favorite one of his that sort of always sticks with me is around kind of when he talks about bees. I'm going to use that one because A, bees are awesome, and B, it gives me an excuse to use a fun word, which is waggle dance. We all know the bees come back to the hive, they do the waggle dance, they tell the other bees where to go and get the honey, right? I can't remember the exact stat, but it's something like only 50, 60% of them will then follow that advice, because if they didn't go off elsewhere, they wouldn't find new sources of pollen, etc., right? And there's a big piece around this and it being a deliberate thing. A lot of brands will talk to you about test and learn and have that sort of real appetite to do it, but not have the structure or buy-in internally to really carry it out. There's still a surprising number of marketing stakeholders that I'll speak to where I'll ask, what percentage of your budget is specified for test and learn? Or how much of it as you don't what's your test and learn roadmap? And quite often you can uncover that it's around, oh, we tried something different this Black Friday, or we tried something different this Jan sale, or we've done a little bit of testing around kind of they all get the purpose around sort of CRO in terms of the importance of testing certain levels of traffic to different page layouts and things like that. But when it comes to a deliberate, we have set aside money to do something we've never done before, which we will mitigate risk as far as we can, but may not work. That becomes a very scary proposition when you could just say, yeah, we could just stick it all on own brand into Google Ads and have a really high ROAS to report.
It's interesting. So, yeah, there's almost two pieces of advice there. One, be more like a bee, which I think is great advice, particularly if you dress like one, could really create a stir in the office. And the other thing, as you say, have a proportion of budget for testing, trying things, taking risks. Any advice on how much of a budget that should be?
Well, look, years ago, the old adage was always sort of 70, 20, 10. You know, you put 70% of your budget on the tried and tested, 20% on, stuff that you've dabbled with a little bit and is showing some fruit, you're refining it, and 10% on, best one in the world could be a complete punt. For me, generally now, I kind of put the bias or the weighting slightly different in that I would suggest you're almost looking at sort of an 80-20 or 85-15. I think the idea of this sort of phased activity when there's so much out there to test and learn at the moment is a tricky one to justify. Likewise, we're not blind to the fact that there is this pressure to deliver, and you can have a bad quarter or a bad Q4, and then suddenly you've lost a ton of market share or something. So I think for me, making sure that sort of 80, 85% of the budget is going on stuff that you are really confident in, because the refinement piece should be happening anyway. Optimization, et cetera, should be part and parcel of your rigor and best practice. But the thing that's struck me the last sort of 2, 3 years, and obviously everyone's been hearing about AI nonstop and fails to remember that it's been going for a long, long time. This tech has been in everything we do with Meta and Google and whoever else for many, many years. But there has never been more opportunities to test something new that could give you a competitive advantage through early adoption.
Yeah, absolutely. What a wonderful, wonderful segue into AI, because we wanted to talk about that. So you mentioned that AI and machine learning, all that kind of stuff around in ads and in ad platforms has been around for ages, all that auto optimization stuff. But what is genuinely new? So what innovations are there out there that you think people could actually be looking at and thinking about?
So I think the biggest thing for me in terms of AI at the moment is still kind of how it can facilitate or ease the pain of a marketer. I think there's two sort of fundamental shifts in the marketing and agency space with AI. One is, I think, kind of the ability to model and leverage data and some of those reporting tools that I talked about earlier. By all means, connect with me after this if you want me to name drop in a DM or whatever to anyone listening. But there are a heap of them that can effectively shortcut you to a not perfect, but really good steer in terms of, okay, how should I invest my marketing budget across which channels, what kind of weighting, what sort of campaigns, what would that forecast look like over what kind of time could I appreciate? The tech for the modeling and forecasting on this side has moved forward enough to make that a really viable and helpful tool to someone that might otherwise be a pretty limited marketing team internally. The other side of it for me is more in terms of an operational side of things, in terms of how you work either as a team or with your agency. So a big thing that we're seeing at Climb at the moment is, well, what, there's two factors here, right? One is the fact that as a sort of mid-size independent agency, we are seeing many people in the same kind of size of business are seeing the same, where increasingly the big holdcos, the networks, the publicists, WPPs, et cetera, this world are increasingly going after mid-market. One big reason on that is the fact that whereas previously, a lot more sort of manual legwork, they wouldn't have been able to take on a slightly smaller client and run them profitably. Whereas now through AI tools, et cetera, they can. So that's one sort of big factor stretching it. And then the other thing that we're seeing is that, understandably, brands and marketers do not want to pay for legwork and admin, right? How much of a retainer do you really want to be investing into a business for things like, oh, but that covers your meetings and invoicing and some of those kind of sides of things. So one of the things that we're seeing some real success at Climate is just benefiting a little bit, and we can't really take that much credit for being super clever about it, other than the fact it's a really good testament to breadth and depth of expertise. But we're seeing some real advantage of the fact that we're very much a genuine one-stop shop. So everything from your web build, paid media, SEO, CRO, creative, et cetera. Because I think for brands of a certain size, the real sort of flinching point comes when if you and you quite likely are managing several different agency relationships, the perception of how much duplication of spend into fees and support over things that are kind of day-to-day running is a tricky one to justify. Whereas the ability, you know, increasingly importantly, particularly if you have the metrics that give you that analytics and insight in terms of where to invest, how to influence the customer journey, increasingly you need to pivot so quickly between, okay, great. So, depending on the kind of business, it's holidays, everyone's away, demand has dropped or whatever else. I want to very quickly upweight my paid media spend into some SEO work or some CRO optimization or improvements in web speed or something or other like that to do that. And perhaps only do that for, say, a 3-month project prior to, Q4 coming around. And then I want to instantly pivot and go straight back to dialing up my PPC spend really, really high, my paid social spend, et cetera, for that customer acquisition, leveraging the demand while it's there. And so that makes it a little bit tricky. And a lot of agencies I'm speaking to at the moment are seeing kind of an increase in ad hoc project.
Mm.
So I think it's that efficacy of ways of working and partner, and that you know, the right answer varies very differently by brand, et cetera. But that's a key thing for me, I think I'm seeing at the moment.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. I think, yeah, most of the gains I've seen is more from that operational side, as you say. And I was at an event last year, and there was someone there from Sweaty Betty, and they were talking about how they're essentially using it to just generate massive amounts of ad variants. So loads of different ad variants, different copy, different images. And they're just loading those up into an auto optimizer and just seeing what comes out of the bottom in terms of what gets better. And as you say, it can't come up with particularly good new creative ideas, but it's really good for that pumping through those things and just operationalizing that in a much more active way. So that's where I think a lot of the benefits really are coming, rather than
good example of a deliberate agenda about test and learn.
Exactly.
In terms of a very deliberate approach to something rather than kind of an ad hoc trial and maybe won't do again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, thousands of variants, probably tiny little differences between them, but yeah, they're really finding out what drives performance. So great. So yeah, what we like to do is just leave everyone with a bit of a takeaway, something that actually matters. So yeah, give our audience one thing they can go away and try and might make a difference in the short term.
If you are still one of those many marketers that are rocking back and forth in a corner and weeping over how much you hate GA4, even though it's been going for however many years now already, give it another crack. Bring it up your agenda in terms of the importance on what it can do for you, for your attribution, what it can do for you in terms of identifying pockets of audience segment, the amount of customization that is there. There are loads of options out there in the marketplace for people that can help you with either training or little bits of customization, and get over the fact that it's not UA, and UA was lovely. And I say this as someone who was pretty decent with UA, and I'm rubbish with GA4, but I'm amazed that we're 2 years on, maybe even three now, I think. And the number of people that still kind of, oh, we use our CRM as our single source of truth, or oh, we use sort of Shopify as our source of truth. And whilst many of these platforms can work, the discrepancy that you're going to see between that, your ad accounts, and everything else is very, very difficult. And and this is going to be something that does undermine your confidence and your ability to sort of do good test and learn and sort of break away from the CFO pressure of just going after what they can accurately say is kind of, yeah, we definitely got a ROAS of 5 or 10 or whatever it is you're after. So look, if you're still struggling with GA4, you're not alone. There's been 50 updates released in the last year. Yes, it's a pig. Yes, it's less user friendly. Yes, it needs more customization, but I promise you it's not as hard as you think it is. And if you adopt it, there's massive benefits for it.
Lovely. So yeah, get stuck back into GA4, particularly before GA5, which I'm sure at some point, and probably has a lot of AI in it. That's I think that's fairly fair to say. So Andy, brilliant, thank you very much. That was all really interesting stuff, lots of stuff I didn't know about because I'm not too involved in performance, so really great. Where can people find you? They can connect with you on LinkedIn. You're Andy Griffiths, you're easy to find.
Absolutely. I'm relatively easy to find. I don't have any kind of pseudonym or ghostwriting names or anything on LinkedIn. You can find me pretty easily. You can always get in touch with us via the website as well, climb.agency. Please check us out. Yeah. And if there's anything we can do to help, or you've got sort of, keen for a coffee and a chat and moaning all things data, then we're always here to chat through.
Wonderful. I'm sure people will take you up on that. It sounds great. I want a coffee with Andy. Come on. It sounds like a great way to spend your afternoon. Thank you, Andy. That was brilliant. Thank you for your time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And
always a pleasure, Dan. Thanks so much. Cheers.
Thanks, Andy. Browse Basket Buy is brought to you by your friends at Revlifter. Promotions work, but they damage brand and margins. Revlifter's intelligent offers drive results by using behavioral signals to target the right customers at the right time. Customers typically see 20% more conversions, 30% higher AOV, 5% more revenue, and a 10% saving on promotional costs. So stop wasting discounts on people who'd buy anyway. Try Revlifter free for 90 days, and they'll handle all the heavy lifting. Visit Revlifter.com to find out more. That's Revlifter.com.